And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Hey, hey, hey.
What's going on, folks? How y'all doing? I had to do a Fat Albert, man.
Wow. I was not expecting that.
Did I get a catch off guard?
Yeah, a little bit. You all did. Right.
I'm sure it caught all of our listeners off guard.
It was good, though. It was very, very faithful.
Yeah. That's cool. So, God, it's kind of been like a quiet week, but then things seem to pick up today. So we've got quite a lot of topics to discuss and talk about.
Yeah.
One of which is a sort of all-out review and commentary about Captain Marvel. So for the first time in a long time, we actually didn't get a chance to see the movie together.
We didn't.
Or a movie.
And we haven't really spoken about it.
No.
Yeah, so before we do that, though, we got to talk about the big story of the week, which is Batman versus Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which I'm very excited about.
That's kind of wild, man.
Yes.
I saw the trailer, and initially it was like, oh, what kind of animation style were they going to go for? It seems like every once in a while, it's probably more frequently than every once in a while, but they, you know, cast somebody new as to do the voice of Batman. So I was interested to hear that. But dude, it looked pretty sick. Like,
yes.
The whole concept of it,
yes, it
is like crazy.
Yeah, it's based on the comic crossover too. So obviously that's not the big story of the week, but I saw that today and I got very, very excited about it. So yeah, so we're mentioning it briefly.
Yeah. So
all right, so let's talk about Captain Marvel.
Yeah, let's do it. So
start. Yeah, like you said, we did not see this together, we have not discussed it. So my basic thoughts on the movie, now I've had a few days to also kind of think about it, but my general reaction is still to this day what it was when I left the theater, and that is that it's okay. I feel like it was saved very much by the third act, because I thought up until that point it actually wasn't particularly good. That middle section didn't do much for me. It just, so anybody knows, we probably will get spoilery with this.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah,
we're about like a week out, so it's to be expected. If you didn't see the movie, sorry, I suggest you skip forward.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So, I mean, the middle section where it was Brie Larson and Samuel L. Jackson, like on Earth, just kind of doing things, that didn't do much for me. And I thought that the character has a lot of potential. When you finally get to see the character do some exciting things, it is pretty exciting. And you get an idea of just how powerful the character is, which is why, I guess, you know, it's so important for this character to be in the next Avengers movie. But I just don't think this movie did the character a great service from a creative perspective. It's making a ton of money, so obviously, you know, it's certainly putting the character on the map, but I don't think they did much with it. The one thing that did surprise me was that I actually enjoyed her more than I thought I would. You know, going into this, as I've mentioned before on the show, my concern was, you know, and I like Brie Larson, but my concern was that she wasn't doing it for me in the trailers. Like, I was worrying about her line delivery and things like that. And I actually enjoyed her after the beginning. Like, once they get back to Earth, or they come down to Earth, I thought that she was really effective. I think she has a real likability factor to her. She's a little wooden in the beginning, and I don't know if that was a creative decision or if that was just
I thought it was
her.
Maybe like just the Kree thing.
It could be,
You know what I mean? They're very like antiquated kind of characters. All of them were kind of like that, very military and like for the cause, you know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, so that was a pleasant surprise, and that's why I'm actually, despite the fact that I didn't love this movie, I'm excited for the character. Like, I'm excited to see this character again. Because I do think there's a lot of potential. After the movie was over, I made the analogy, and it's not completely accurate because I did enjoy Doctor Strange more than I enjoyed this, but it's kind of like how I liked I thought Doctor Strange was much cooler in Infinity War than he was in his own movie.
Right.
I feel like we're going to get that again with this.
Yeah.
But, you know, what was also interesting was the fact that this is not a traditional origin story either.
No.
And
no,
we can,
it is not.
Yeah, we can talk a little bit about that after, like, you give your general thoughts on it. But this does not follow the traditional formula.
Glad you said that,
yeah,
my man.
And it takes some interesting creative decisions with the concept of the origin story, but let's get your kind of general thoughts first, and then we could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so I'm kind of in line with you, man. It was a decent MCU film, certainly not the best. And I thought it was fun. I also kind of got stuck in the middle section was a bit squishy for me. And I do, you know what I think though, like as I thought about that section, it was more of a Nick Fury kind of thing. Like you kind of get a bit more of who he was before, you know, before things kind of like hit, before the S hit the fan, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I agree. I think the third act certainly saved the film tremendously because it just kind of like kicked up a notch. And I was like all in at that point when we get to the third act and she like changes the color of her suit. And I'm like, all right, finally we're kind of getting there. I thought that was really good stuff. Some of the best damn flying sequences I've seen in a movie, to be honest with you. In that last act. I agree. I think maybe in the beginning, her character portrayal was meant to be a bit more reserved because that was not her tapping into her emotions, which seemed to be, you know, sort of running thread throughout the course of the movie, which is, you know, her controlling herself. And so, you know, you kind of get this very surface wooden character in the beginning because she's trying to be somebody she's not. And then, you know, at the end she says that whole line, I've been fighting with my one hand tied behind my back kind of thing. And it's like you finally get to see her in all of her glory in the last part of the movie. I thought some of the plot devices and the sort of switching of characters I thought was really interesting. So making Marvel a woman was a cool choice to me, and also more interestingly was the flip of the Skrulls and actually showing that there was some empathy, that you can have some empathy for those characters and sympathy for them as well. You know, I thought that was really cool because I was thinking they were going to go full blown like Secret Invasion, like these characters like the worst things in the world. I thought it had a lot of charm and a lot of humor. I liked some of the Easter eggs and the, you know, the fan service to the 90s era. I know people have some sticking points about soundtracks and music being like a little too much.
I'm one of those people.
Okay. We'll talk about that. But yeah, generally, I mean, I thought it was an okay movie. You know, I wasn't, again, completely blown away by it. There were some lines I was like, ooh, I can't believe this was written into this movie. But I did walk out of that theater feeling pretty, you know, like, okay, that was a fine show. I think I got more out of it just listening to conversations after the movie had finished to some teenage girls and, you know, women who were talking about the film and just understanding, just kind of getting a bit of their perspective of how important it is to have a character like this. And this was sort of always been my thing about this film in general was, yeah, the trailers weren't really spectacular, but I also understood that it's a really important film in general for a different demographic of people and of, you know, the female gender. I thought it was great, and it's phenomenal to see that they've got, so many new characters that they can latch on to and identify with. So it was really cool to hear girls getting excited about, you know, the next Avengers movie because she's going to be in it. You know what I'm saying? Yep. So that was really cool for me. And I thought some of the action sequences were pretty dope. And, you know, again, I had some fun, but, you know, there are certainly better Marvel films for sure. So yeah. If I were to give it a rating, it'd be like a B.
Yeah, I'm probably leaning more kind of B. My original thought was B that night, and then I was like, maybe B minus.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's not really a movie that I'm kind of dying to see again.
Yeah.
Talking about the music, though, for a second, since I am in the boat of people who were like, oh, man, you really... They do a lot in this movie to remind you that it's 1995, right? So it, some of it works, some of it didn't. Like I, the thing with the computer where they were waiting for it to load, like that was funny. That worked.
That was hilarious.
You know, obviously if you remember that, which I do.
Yeah.
I got my first actual like 486 PC in 1995. So for me, that like hit home, you know. But the music was very much like, yes, hi, we're in the 90s. Like the whole thing with Come As You Are.
Right.
Would just was really weird to me. Like that whole sequence was weird. It didn't quite make sense. And you know, Just a Girl and all that stuff was like, oh, okay, I get it. It's very on the nose for a couple of reasons. But the music, this is the second movie in a row of, well, this type of movie anyway, where the music threw me a little bit. The music didn't work for me.
Did you see my conversation on Twitter about another movie that we won't talk about, and the Baywatch scene and the cover song of Africa from...
Yeah, no, and I get it. I mean, it wasn't that egregious to me, but it didn't work overall. The music, I thought, was a little weird. Talking about the Skrulls for a second, because that was interesting.
Wait. Before we get to the Skrulls, let's talk about the music. Let's talk about the music.
Okay.
So... I don't really understand the, like, I don't want to say sensitivities, but I guess the issue that folks are having with the music, because in Guardians of the Galaxy, like, now granted, those are masterful, the integration of music. So I don't want to necessarily compare it like apples to apples, but, you know, a lot of the music that Peter Quill listens to is a reminder, a sort of callback to, you know, the era that he came from, right? And like his quote unquote abduction time. So there's some, you know, I don't really, I get, maybe it's because it's not so obvious and it just kind of flows in. It makes it, sets the tone.
Although,
and this is kind of like in your face.
To me, the difference there though is that in a way, the music in Guardians of the Galaxy is almost, it's sort of,
it's
part of the plot in that it's tied into his mother.
I agree.
And the, you know, the fact that she gives him that Walkman and
the mixtape
as a gift. So that, and essentially it's a part of his memory. It's a part of his childhood. It's a part of his bond with his mother. That essentially is why he's listening to that music. It's a security blanket for him. So it's a character point for him. It's a plot point in the movie. It's not something that's just like a cool thing. It's like you said, it's like a character almost in the film. This movie set in the 90s. We're going to have fun with some 90s music that'll hopefully bring some nostalgia to some people, and it'll be fun. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
I just thought that some of it was like, and again, it wasn't egregious to me. It wasn't something I was like cringing at and like, well, the Come As You Are thing, I cringed a little bit, but just because it wasn't so much the music as much as it was like the whole concept of that scene didn't make a lot of sense to me, and the music didn't help it. But I didn't think it was egregious. I just didn't think that there was a lot memorable in the score.
Okay.
And I didn't.
And it didn't like help any of the scenes.
No. And in fact, the most memorable thing was the Avengers theme that plays.
Right.
Which really shouldn't have been the best thing musically in the movie. That was really my general kind of gripe.
Gotcha. Okay, so Skrulls, go for it.
All right, so the Skrulls. you obviously, it seems like you liked the what they did with them, or maybe I'm wrong about that, but it was interesting what they did with them, because I was not expecting that at all.
Yeah, oh, no, I wasn't at all. I did enjoy it, actually.
Yeah, I was thinking this was going to be, like, the beginning of, like, the secret invasion type of deal where, like, the Skrulls were going to become a major villain going forward and that anybody potentially could be a Skrull and we'd have something like that.
Right.
Clearly, the Skrulls were, one, turned out to not even be the bad guys in this movie. Mm-hmm. They're used as a metaphor for, like, refugees. Which is fine.
Right.
But it was interesting that I compared it after the movie, and it's not exactly a fair comparison. But to me, it was a little bit. Now, forget about how effective it was, because I actually enjoyed the Skrulls and Ben Mendelsohn in particular. I thought he was great.
He had a lot of personality.
Yeah, but
more personality than I would have expected.
Yeah, I agree. But it was a little bit like, to me, the Mandarin in Iron Man 3. In the sense that what you thought was going to be like this epic kind of big villain, they wound up making it wasn't exactly what you thought it was. Now, it's not a great comparison in that it's not exactly the same thing, but it was in the sense it was like, wow, the Skrulls. And then it was like, oh, that's what they did with them. Okay. Not what I was expecting.
Yeah, I mean, but that's like for every that's for every comic book fan, right? Like every person who kind of has the history of the Skrulls and sort of where they are in comic book lore, you'd have that expectation. The Mandarin, I think for everybody, for general audiences and comic book lovers alike, was like having the wool pulled over your eyes and then someone beating you with a bar of soap and a sock. Like,
right. Yeah.
You know, because it kind of took the air out of the room when that happened, like when they revealed that, and then you end up with like a bumbling fool.
Right. Yeah, that's why I say it's not an exact comparison, but it was in the general sense of like not what you were expecting when you found out the Skrulls were going to be in this thing.
You know, for me, when that was revealed, I was kind of like, of course they're not all bad. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's a war. So there's like,
true. Yes,
you know, there one side, this side, and then in between is like the real reason why they're all fighting and the truth. So, and then it kind of made me think, well, yeah, you know, Ronan is a Kree and he's like some sort of, I don't know, extremist. So it kind of that kind of stuff started to make sense of it, and I was like, okay, I see what they're doing. They're not doing a direct rip from the comic, and you know, the green Martian men are the bad guys. It's actually the blue people.
Yeah.
The blue man group. But I thought that was interesting, and I enjoyed it. So
yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens going forward, because we've now essentially lost like a 20-plus year piece of this character's history. And it'll be interesting to see if we ever see any of that again.
Well, Kevin Feige talked a little bit about that, right? He had some comments maybe 2 days ago, which would be like almost a week ago for you guys who are listening, where he said, you know, did she actually find them a home? You know, will, you know, there may still be bad Skrulls out there. Looking to invade, you know, another, you know, Earth. So he's kind of leaving it open. And it also sounds like, depending, they've got some options at their disposal. If they want to do like another period piece with Captain Marvel, they can space.
Although one thing I did say after the movie was, I hope that doesn't happen, because about a movie with no stakes. I mean, essentially you know, the character is not going to die, and you assume that like if Ronan or somebody else was like the big bad, like, well, you know, he didn't die then either. So it's like, what are we doing? Like, what are we watching?
Yeah. I almost thought that they were going to force feed Thanos somehow in the picture. And I'm glad they didn't do that either. Yeah. There were things that I was kind of worried about, because there was lots to play with, in this time frame, like the Starks, like Hank Pym, you know what I mean? Like all those people who are still, like Peggy Carter. And I was like, oh, please, I don't want us to go down that road. I'm glad they kind of insulated all of that. and just kept it to like the Tesseract and Fury and Coulson. And I was actually disappointed in the use of Coulson, but fine.
Yeah. To bring the character back and to just kind of have him really not do much, just sort of be just kind of like a guy.
Oh, yeah, this is why him and Fury are friends. This is why they trust each other. Great.
And,
you know?
Yeah, and what
I thought
about...
they were going to bring back Robert Redford.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that would have been cool.
What about the... What about the...
Don't even go there with the eye.
Yeah, no, forget it. Don't bother.
No, you know what? I know it's ruffling a lot of people's feathers. I don't care. It doesn't bother me. I understand the setup in The Winter Soldier when he's like, you know, last time I trusted somebody, I lost an eye. Great. It was a cat.
Well, yeah. And that part doesn't bother me so much because obviously, you know, your chances are you're not going to. That's a story you're probably going to build up. You know, like you're not going to go around saying, "Oh, a cat scratched my eye," and that's what happened. But like,
and
why
and
bother?
Does,
why you know? Bother even showing it if you're gonna if that was going to be it?
I think
it's kind of a big moment that they could have teased over like in time, and they kind of I think threw it away with that. But,
yeah,
I mean,
they didn't
whatever.
Need to. They didn't need to do the eye patch thing that fast.
Right.
I didn't think. I was like, fine, we need an answer. Fine, you want to give it to us, and that's what it is. It's a cat scratch. Cool. Well, the funny thing is because he gets scratched, and he's like, it's just a scratch, and Ben Mendelsohn's character is like, no.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, no. Oh, no, it's not.
Yeah. But
and he ends up losing
just
his
a
eye,
minor
but.
Thing. Well, one thing we did talk about, we teased it in the beginning. We'll talk about it here. So... the idea of this thing not being a traditional origin story.
Yes.
And not following
yes,
the basic
formula.
I'm
so glad you said that because
yeah.
This has been, and it's not the first movie to do it either, the first MCU film. And so this was something on Twitter I was commenting with our good friend and buddy, Tavo Borrego, about. And I said, this movie is cutting itself away from the typical Marvel blueprint. And he was like, what are you talking about? You know, and I'm like, dude, we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it. And it's exactly that. It's that it's not a traditional origin story.
No.
And if we think about what's happened in this, I guess it's the latest phase of the MCU. Maybe it's even has to do with 3. But the latest characters we've been introduced to that have had their solo films have not had traditional origin movies. Black Panther is the Black Panther before we meet him, right? Peter Parker is Spider-Man before we meet him. And Captain Marvel is Captain Marvel before we meet them. Now they evolve into their full, you know, hero form, but we're not seeing them get their powers and then...
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say Captain Marvel's Captain Marvel when we meet her, but I get what you mean. Like, she's got her powers already. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Although...
But there's a stronger pivot from that,
yeah.
You know, that architecture in Captain Marvel than there has been in some of the other films because they were teased. You know, Black Panther and Spider-Man were teased in Civil War.
Yes.
So
we kind of got the origin of Black. Well, kind of an origin of Black Panther in Civil War, sort of.
But
yeah.
You know.
We don't really get the origin of Spider-Man because do we need that again at this point?
We
no.
don't need it.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, so Captain Marvel just launches us right into this is the character. She's an adult with these abilities. And throughout the course of the film, it's about her amnesia and her memories. And then we get her origin story like at the end.
Yeah. And then there's kind of like... in a way, it's the way they handle, especially in the beginning, it's almost like a kind of like a Memento-esque type of deal where it's like, you know, you're not seeing things linear. You're seeing things based on the memories and how much of the memory she's seeing and how much of it is accurate.
Mm-hmm,
so you're not.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's got like blue blood.
Yes.
All that stuff. Yeah.
So you never get that moment where it's like, or at least in the beginning, where she starts out as, you know, Carol Danvers' pilot, and then this happens, and then this happens, and then she gets her power, and then the, you get it in bits and pieces, not even sequentially, and you get it like in dribs and drabs, and you're not sure exactly what to believe and what not to believe as the movie goes on, and then finally you kind of get it. But yeah, so it really doesn't follow a traditional structure. Now, when I say that, I admire them going that route. I just would have preferred a more traditional kind of linear origin story for this character.
Well, that, and I think this is where the writing could have kept things a little tighter.
Yeah.
Because they're sprinkling these little mini adventures throughout the discovery process. And, I don't want to say some of it wasn't necessary, but, you know, some of it takes you away from, like, the nagging question, right? It's like, who is she? I knew who she was. Obviously, I knew who she was. But, you know, I agree. I think it was a bold choice to craft a movie that way. I don't know if I've, you know, Memento obviously is a great example, but I don't know if I've ever seen another superhero film do something like that, right? No, not really.
No, I mean, you usually when you get the origin story, you get the origin. Yeah, you get the traditional origin story. They start out as whatever they were, you know, and then they get their powers, and then they have to discover them and work with them and train through them, and then yeah, I mean, if thinking like, you know, if you look at the solo movies, like you were talking about, like Black Panther wasn't really set out to be an origin story. And Spider-Man Homecoming wasn't set out to be an origin story. They were just first-time solo films for characters. Mm-hmm. Characters that we had seen before in some capacity. Ant-Man was an origin story. Right. Doctor Strange was an origin story. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Phase 1 stuff, you know, with Captain America, the First Avengers, very much an origin story and mm-hmm, you know, things mm-hmm. like that. But, Incredible Hulk, I mean, he's already the Hulk in that, right? So you get the opening credit sequence, yeah, which is sort of giving you the origin kind of, and then he's already right. Bruce Banner with he's hulking up and stuff already when that movie starts. Right. Iron Man is a classic origin story. So yeah, I mean, we haven't really gotten anything like this. And like I said, it doesn't work for me 100%. But I admire they took the chance with it. I just think the movie would have been a little bit more fun if it was kind of more traditional, less wacky, kind of less, I wouldn't say hard to follow. It was confusing in spots, and I said I just think it did the character a little bit of a disservice.
I kind of wish it was a bit more like, there was that scene where they're sort of interrogating her and her memories and they're looking for things.
Yeah,
like I thought that would have been a more interesting way to kind of tease more of her stuff out, is like where, like, the Skrulls kind of peeking in on who she is and what she's doing and all of that stuff. But even in that sequence, we get it in piecemeal.
Yeah.
So you don't, like, she, you know, she's on the airstrip, she's talking to an embeddings character. Then she's in a cockpit and he's like focusing on, and I'm like, what the heck is going on? I will say though, the one thing I did like was that as she was kind of going through her memories and, she's fighting the sort of Kree AI, you get those flashbacks where she's like a little girl and she falls and they start to piece it all together. And it's more about how she always gets up and she always fights back. Like,
yes,
I thought that was really cool. I really enjoyed that.
Yes,
and it was really metaphoric. And I thought they did a great job at kind of, again, and that's like the start of the third act.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's I enjoyed that. I thought that was good. But agree, I think, you know.
Now I'm
bold, but not well executed.
Yeah, the idea was better than the execution. But yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the little girl thing for a second, because I have to mention this. But a shout out to Luke, who came out to the watch party and mentioned this after the movie. I thought this would be right up your alley. I'm surprised you haven't mentioned this. Maybe you didn't pick up on it, and maybe I'm about to ruin your day. But did you notice that the young Carol Danvers, the little girl Carol Danvers, had blue eyes, and Brie Larson does not have blue eyes.
She has green eyes?
Or brown eyes, green eyes, something like that.
Man, I don't care about that.
You, really?
I didn't notice that.
You don't care about that?
Well, yeah, I didn't even catch it.
None of us did. He caught it, and we were all like, really? Oh, I'm like, I can't. Aaron's going to go crazy. And no, you didn't. All right, so anyway. having said all of this, though, I will say that when he got to the mid-credits scene,
mm-hmm.
which showed the remaining Avengers all kind of huddled up.
Yeah.
Right? And they're trying to figure out the paging device or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and what the meaning of it was. And then she shows up and she's like, where's Fury?
Yeah.
Which none of us could hear, by the way, because as soon as she showed up on the screen, everyone started cheering. Which,
ooh, they lost their minds.
Which was kind of cool because, and I was excited for it too. And that's kind of what I mean when I said, like, I'm really excited to see this character, even though I thought the movie was just okay. Because,
I mean, but the thing is, like, dude, she, like, totally kicked ass at the end of the film. So, yeah. It's like, yeah, you know what I mean? You're like,
exactly.
Yeah, here comes the big gun.
Yes.
Like, you know, she's not going to mess around.
Right. So I was kind of pumped when she popped in. I mean, we all knew that was going to happen, obviously, but still, it was like, wow, that's cool. And then when she's like, which I was like, man, that worked. Like, that scene is a great little mid-credits teaser to go into Endgame.
Yeah. Yeah, that got me all types of stoked. And the other thing, too, was to see Cap's beard again, so we know it's happening exactly after the stuff in Wakanda. So, yeah, I mean, I hope they're going to kick it right off with her, you know?
Yeah, I mean, she's obviously going to be, she's going to be there. If not, that would be a major continuity flaw.
It's going to be, she's the one that gets Iron Man out of space.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh.
Could be.
I don't know.
Why not?
Speculating right here. I have no idea. It just makes sense.
Yeah. Right.
And, okay, so before, unless we still have more to talk about here, before we get into our next topic, the one thing I did want to say was the freaking Stan Lee cameo, man.
Oh, God,
in this.
Man.
How freaking good was that?
Boy, let me tell you something. Well, first of all, the opening thing with the where the Marvel logo is, instead of the traditional where they show all the characters, was all Stan Lee stuff. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
And yeah, that cameo, that is you now there's a perfect example of how to blend the nostalgia and like an on the nose reference to the time period, but do it so perfectly and incorporate it into that Stan Lee cameo.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was a home run right there.
It was awesome. It was awesome. And so shout out to our buddy Phil, who said on Twitter, and I totally am going to steal this. He said, if Kevin Smith exists in the MCU and he goes on to write DC shows, does that mean the DC universe exists in the MCU universe? Yeah.
I'm going home. Goodbye, everybody. Thank you. Take care. Good night.
I'm turning to ash.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah, wow. But yeah, that was great stuff.
But yeah, some good stuff, man. Yeah, that was it's touching too, because you know, just lost the guy.
Sure.
So he still has a couple of cameos left, at least two, I think. I think he shows up in Far From Home and obviously Avengers Endgame. So
yeah, and that Far From Home trailer, seeing it again on the big screen,
Far From Home.
Yeah, I can't wait for that movie.
That's so stoked, man. So we've got like a litany of watch parties.
Yes.
in the near term. So for folks that are listening, if you find yourself in the New York City area in the summertime, be it on vacation, visiting friends, doing whatever it is that you do, be sure to time it with an Avenger watch or Revenger. I said Avenger. Revenger watch party.
Yes.
Because there will be plenty. So
there will be.
Yeah. All right.
So
any more on
No,
Captain
I think
Marvel?
That's it, unless you had any, you want to talk about the cat?
Dude, I thought the cat was cool.
Yeah,
man.
Cat's cool.
They did some funny stuff with the cat. It was, and the cat kind of stole the show towards the end of the film when they're running through the corridors. What did you think about the reference to Pulp Fiction in the film?
There was a lot of stuff. There were a lot of references to the time period, to other projects that people had. Yeah, I mean, so
yeah,
you know, it was fine.
Yeah. And I will say, some of the best damn de-aging I've ever seen.
Oh, that, absolutely.
And I'm almost convinced that it is both practical and visual effects.
Because Samuel L. Jackson, I thought, looked better than...
Coulson.
Yeah, Coulson at times, probably because I'm thrown by the hair. Seriously, Coulson looked a little wacky sometimes, and fake. But Samuel L. Jackson, I would have not had any idea that I was looking at a de-aged person.
That was awesome.
Yeah,
I mean, it looked like Sam Jackson from The Negotiator.
Yeah.
Oh, which another great movie. Damn. We got to do some, like, recommendations of the week, man. Oh, we'll start with that.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Why not? You just did. There you go.
Just do it.
Average recommendation, The Negotiator.
It is a good movie.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a good movie.
It's okay. It's fine.
It's all right. Yeah. It's Sam Jackson.
You could
best.
Do worse. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So what's the next thing?
So today, that is Tuesday, March 12th, Disney dropped its, I guess, first official full trailer of Aladdin.
Yes, they did.
Oh, boy.
It's weird. My official statement, because Vanessa Bontea had asked us what we thought of this on Twitter, and my official scientific, well thought out response was, it's weird. So
I've seen it.
You've seen it. I just thought it just kind of looks weird. I mean, she had a good point where she said that it kind of almost has like a Bollywood vibe to it, and maybe that was intentional, and that's cool if it was. But Will Smith, for me, and it's funny because we were talking at the watch party, or the pre party, about how my comments on Will Smith, I guess on the last episode, talking about how I won't miss him as Deadshot because they felt like he was Will Smith playing Will Smith as Deadshot. So watching this trailer, like I don't dislike Will Smith. There are a number of Will Smith movies that I like. I feel like, though, I apparently dislike Will Smith when he's playing these types of characters where I have to forget it's Will Smith.
Yeah.
And I can't.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
It's he has a, oh God, this is going to sound really weird. He's got like this, like Ben Stiller plays Ben Stiller in all of his films, right? Like just kind of different iterations of himself. And I feel like that's exactly what Will Smith does. It's like he's the same like loud, like, ah, like, you know what I'm saying? I don't even know if that makes any sense. But yeah.
Did we hear that Will Smith?
Okay. He's like painted blue, yeah. Will Smith.
Yeah. That's, you know what I mean? Yes, like, that's
you're
the
not
vibe
the genie.
That I got.
You're just Will Smith.
Yes,
blue.
I agree.
with a goatee and some weird, like...
And
I
you can get away with that in animation. But
yeah.
where you know, you're looking at a drawing and you're just hearing a voice. But when it's something like this, it's a lot harder to pull off. Like, you almost... I feel like they almost would have been better off with a more nondescript actor playing this character.
Or him just voicing a character that didn't look like it wasn't him.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Right. That probably would have worked better as well. Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird. Like, I think that's the thing. So there's no escaping the idea that it's Will Smith. When you watch a movie like The Jungle Book and you see Baloo the bear, but it's not Bill Murray dressed up as a bear. It's a bear.
No, yeah,
you know,
that would
it
have
sounds
been
like
That would have been terrible.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it's Bill Murray acting as a bear. Yes. This isn't really Will Smith acting like a genie. It's right. Like Will Smith being Will Smith in Hutch.
Yes.
In Blue.
Hitch, by the way.
Hitch. Yeah. Thank you.
A guilty Hutch pleasure Hutch's. Of mine, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Case, yes, my recommendation stuff. For the week.
There you
Hitch.
Go. Boom.
Yeah.
Watch it. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I like the cast, the Aladdin casting, but I mean, it looks like, dude, the cartoon character walked off the page.
Yes.
It looks just like him.
Yeah.
I feel like I've seen Jasmine in something. So, and I know people commented about The Lion King because The Lion King was like beat for beat, like the animated version. Is this really what they're going for?
Well, yeah.
You think Disney? I mean, I get it. It kind of makes sense because kids don't. We talked a little bit about this. I don't necessarily think kids have access to that stuff like they used to, the cartoon stuff, the animated stuff, rather.
Well, I, you know, for me, and you had put on, you said on Twitter today, like, about like it's a direct rip of the animated version. And I kind of jokingly, but not said, well, is it a direct rip or is it a faithful adaptation? And I think, but you're right. Like, I don't know that we necessarily need these direct, just like a live action version scene for scene right. of a movie that's already a classic, like animated film. Mm-hmm. I mean, it, you know, it'll probably make a lot of money but I don't have much interest in that. You could do something a little different. Give yourself an opportunity right. to take this into a different place that you can go with live action that maybe you wouldn't go with animation. Just like with animation, you're allowed to go to places that you can't necessarily go with live action. And I would kind of use that to my right. advantage creatively. And it doesn't seem like they're going that route. But, you know, look, they're making these movies for a reason. It's another way to make a ton of money off of an established property and to get more mileage out of these existing properties. You're not going to remake this. You don't do animated remakes, right? Very often.
Yeah, no.
So this is their way of essentially, since we remake everything now, remaking their own classics just for a new audience in a different way. And these movies are not made for us. You know, they're not making this for us, right? They're making it for kids, for a new generation who aren't mm-hmm. going to be sitting around saying, well, I saw this already, or maybe they didn't. You know, like you said, the access isn't the same as it used to be. And, you know, you don't see those movies they're not all over the place like they used to be. And animation isn't what it used to be either.
No.
You know, so to a kid, is hand-drawn animation like those classic, is that exciting? Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah. It's funny you said that because my wife the other day, she's like, my daughter has like a little, you know, golden book. And it's like, my name is Ariel. It's the Little Mermaid. My wife is like, we should buy that. So I bought it, and my wife says, gosh, it's amazing to see how far animation has come, you know, in the past couple of, you know, like 20 or so, 25 years. And, you know, it made me take a pause because I was like, yeah, but there's a lot of work that went into making a movie like The Little Mermaid. And I'm not sure. saying that it's not the same for movies like Wreck-It Ralph, you know, where they are getting water to look like water, or like, you know, the movement of certain things, like the physics of a character. But like a lot of that is also done by programs. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it can anticipate where the character needs to be or where how his body's going to react to a particular element or some sort of catalyst around the character, right? The environment. back in the day when they were making films like Aladdin and the original, and I remember Beauty and the Beast being like a big to-do because of the whole ballroom scene, and that was when they used CGI for that film. But your films like The Little Mermaid, like, that's all hand-drawn stuff, you know? And that,
yeah.
I almost feel like that – I'm not trying to knock the folks that are using, because they have to – they do have to draw, you know – the digital versions of these characters. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see, you know, again, to kind of think about how time intensive that process may have been in the past versus what we've got now, you know. But yeah. I don't know where I was going with that, but anyways, I think you're 100% right. Not for us. Certainly not. And I don't know if parents have gotten to the, you know, I've gotten to a place like where I am, where I'm like, oh yeah, let's bring up this old film. You know, let me show you Aladdin, the animated film. You know, I think kids are probably more likely to want to see the live action stuff. I mean, some of the stuff look cool, a little parkour. So.
Yeah, I would
parkour
think
Aladdin.
Kids would be more excited for this because this is going to stand out to them.
Yeah,
I think more so than
they can identify with a legit character.
Yeah,
like a person.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, and rather than just do like a CGI version of it, you know, or a, not so much CGI, that's more the line, more like a, you know, a computer animated version, a modern day animated, just do it this way. And why not? I mean, and it may be great, you know, but I just, for me, like I said, and it's not meant for me. So it's not the end of the world that I was like, okay, it looks kind of weird. It's not meant for me. It didn't move the needle for me, and that's fine because it's not supposed to. I wasn't going to go see it anyway.
Right.
But I'm sure it's going to make a ton of money. So
yeah,
sure it'll be fine.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Cool.
So what else you got? You're talking about the Batman thing?
Yeah. So as many of you know, it's Batman 80th anniversary. And they will be showing in 5 theaters the full Dark Knight trilogy. So it's coming back. And there will be Q&A sessions with the director himself, Christopher Nolan. So that's pretty exciting. But I wanted to strike up a conversation in terms of like sort of looking back 11 or so years to do that 2008 and talk about if there's been a better comic book movie since The Dark Knight, since it is such an amazing, critically acclaimed film. And has anything, I mean, what's changed? Obviously, the MCU is alive and well, but let's talk about that a little bit. Do you think there's been a better movie?
Well,
comic book movie?
You know, it's tough to say because I'm actually one of the people, or maybe I'm the only person, I don't know, but I'm in the camp that I actually feel like as time has gone on, I prefer Batman Begins to The Dark Knight. I feel like Batman Begins has aged better.
Yeah.
Heath Ledger's performance aside, that's still what it is. It's just a complete tour de force. Like it's just an insane performance. It's a masterwork, and there are certain things in The Dark Knight that are just amazing. I mean, it's a great film. Don't get me wrong. It's a great, great movie with an iconic performance and some amazing scenes, some of the best scenes that I've ever seen in a comic book movie.
Mm-hmm.
But as a pure entertainment and as a movie that I find myself revisiting more and more, I prefer Batman Begins. And I didn't feel that way in 2008, but I do now. So it's hard for me to say when you say, well, has a better comic book movie been made since? Because I don't know what to say to that because I like I said, I don't even feel like it's my favorite movie in the trilogy anymore.
Okay. So in, you know, obviously with those two films, well, let's just say 3. I don't know where you fall with Rises.
I like Dark Knight.
Stepchild of it.
Yeah. I like Dark Knight Rises. I'm not one of those people that hates it. I don't think it's a perfect film,
it for what it is,
but and it's not one that I watch again over and over again, but I like that movie, and I like the risks that it took.
It was a fine way to end it.
Yeah, and I actually do believe that movie kept the spirit of what that entire trilogy was supposed to be about, the idea of Batman as a symbol, right? They talk about it in Batman Begins. He talks about it in Batman Begins, right? The whole idea of, you know, as a symbol, I could be so much more. And that Dark Knight Rises is all about the idea of Batman as a symbol. Batman doesn't exist in that movie, but the idea of Batman is what essentially saves the day. Right. And inspires. Right. And that, to me, made sense. And I think it's something that not a lot of people focus on when they talk about that movie.
Yeah.
But,
agreed.
Yeah, so I like that movie. It's not perfect by any stretch, but I do like it.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, and then going back to the original question, like looking at those films.
Yeah.
Would you say that there have been better ones after?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard Batman to Nolan say. Films? The Nolan... The Dark Knight trilogy is such a special thing because of what it is, first of all. It was a self-contained trilogy that had a beginning, middle, and end, right? It was telling one story, and it didn't have to worry about world building, and it didn't have to worry about anything else other than telling its story. And it treated the character... It didn't treat the character like a comic book superhero.
Right.
You know, and it none of those movies, even though there are some very comic book, there are some scenes in, especially in Batman Begins, that are ripped right out of the comics. It's at no point do you feel like you're watching a comic book superhero movie. You know, they're like crime thrillers. Right. So it's just so different from anything else that we've seen before and after, really. You know, the MCU films are very much you're watching superhero comic book movies. And as for the DCEU stuff, even that, you know, I mean, you know, yeah, Man of Steel, you know, yeah, the color palette and all that stuff, and it's good, but you feel like you're watching a superhero film when you watch Man of Steel.
It's fantastical. That's
absolutely.
Once you start integrating elements of like some supernatural, superhuman stuff.
Yeah. Plus the beginning stuff on Krypton, you know, I mean, that's not real. Yeah. It's not grounded at all. It's very sci-fi and fantastic.
He's on a dragonfly.
Yeah. And even, you know, BVS obviously is a big superhero spectacular, you know, you know, so yeah, there have been great superhero movies that have been made since. I just don't know how to compare the Nolan trilogy to anything else because it's very much unlike anything else that we've seen in this quote-unquote genre.
I agree, and I think that there hasn't been anything quite as extraordinary as those films in terms of not of being comic book, like being based on comic book material but not feeling like comic book. That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, they're Christopher Nolan movies that just happen to have Batman in them.
Right. You know, it's interesting because I look back on kind of going back to 2008 and, you know, Batman and Iron Man, well, the Dark Knight and Iron Man were released within months of each other.
Yeah.
And I just remember walking out of, I think, was it Iron Man first or the Dark Knight? I think
Iron Man came out first.
Was it like in May?
I believe so.
Yeah. So I remember seeing that movie and going like, whew, that was a good film, but phew, so glad you're not anywhere near The Dark Knight because The Dark Knight was going to eat up the whole summer. And it did. And I saw that movie like 3 or 4 times in the theater. But it's kind of funny because you look back in that time period and you had like sort of the character of Batman hitting his peak while, you know, Marvel was starting off with like a B character. And then, you know, we fast forward 10, 11 years and here we are, you know, there isn't a Batman character in theaters. There won't be for a little while. Yeah. And the MCU is about to hit its peak and crescendo. And come down, and we've got DC on its way back up.
Yeah, I mean the two movies, you know, with Dark Knight and with Iron Man, I mean, they were accomplishing two very different things, right? So, whereas Nolan was making that self-contained trilogy, and that was the midsection of it, the MCU was about to start, you know, basically.
Yeah, but
I don't know what they thought the plan was. Right. I don't know that they thought the plan was where we are today, but, or even if that was a hope, maybe it was, but. Yeah, I mean, the two thing they talk about two franchises or two studios that went in completely different directions, you know, off from that point. You know, and that's why I always was kind of hoping that DC would go the direction that they're going now and kind of follow that direction where just make your kind of your movies based on your characters because they're strong enough and make them true and let Marvel do their thing because they need to. And you know, now we're finally seeing why DC is kind of on the up, and not that Marvel is going down anywhere. I mean, Captain Marvel might make $1 billion, probably will. And obviously Endgame is going to be gigantic, and Spider-Man I'm sure will be as well. They're going to have a big year this year, just like they did last year. But, you know, DC is now finally kind of found their footing. And they seem like they're on the verge of, you know, a lot of success now going forward. And that's great, you know, but it just took DC a little bit to kind of figure out where they needed to be. And thankfully they have, seemingly. And, you know, Marvel, it's going to be interesting to see what, I mean, we've talked about this a lot, but it's going to be interesting to see what Marvel does going forward.
The other interesting thing is that, you know, they created in Iron Man, they created that real hardcore superhero comic book genre.
Yes.
Right. And they took it, ran with it. DC tried to do something a little different, something a little bit more serious, a bit more grounded, right? Gritty, dark, all those fun words that have just totally lost their meaning. But, you know, there hasn't really been any movie to take itself seriously again. Now, the only other movie that's kind of stepped out of its category and in a way that's like actually exaggerated the comic book nature of those films is Deadpool. If you think about it, right?
Right. Deadpool stepped out, but in a different direction.
It just like owned itself as a comic book movie.
Yes.
In a complete, like, you know, the fourth wall thing, and it was very Deadpool-ish. So it's going to be interesting to see what the sort of next evolution of the comic book movie franchises are going to look like. I think DC is onto something with their quote unquote black label, whatever the name is. So the Joker film will be something different, you know?
Yeah.
And I hope it is. Because I feel like that for me, as I've gotten older and as I'm starting to realize, and again, as we've talked last week, I don't necessarily think that this latest iteration of DCU films is for me. Maybe the Joker stuff will be, and I'll kind of tap into my fandom that way. But I'm interested to see that they're, you know, obviously they're exploring some new territories and are looking to kind of give a multi-dimensional approach to how they're looking at their comic book franchises. So,
well, let me go back though to your original question, and ask you, like, has there been a better comic book movie in your mind? I mean, you still, I'm assuming The Dark Knight is still your favorite of that trilogy, I would imagine.
You know, it's funny because I'm in the same boat with you, man.
Oh, okay.
I appreciate Begins more as time's gone on.
Yeah.
100%. I do 100% love The Dark Knight for Ledger, like, alone. That, I mean, that there's just no, I will fast forward to certain scenes, to catch him, and, you know, there's also some, like, I love that scene where the the tumbler is damaged and he ejects himself in the bat pod.
Yeah,
I love that. That scene is so dope. But like, I'll watch Begins from start to finish.
Yes,
there's a psychology.
Yep.
In Begins that is only present when Ledger is on the screen. But the rest of, you know, that whole idea of like fear and facing your fear. Yeah.
And it's also a classic origin story. I mean, talking about we talked so about origin good. Stories in the beginning when we talk about Captain Marvel. I mean, Begins is a classic origin story.
Yeah, but it also does some time jumping too.
It does, yeah. But you do get
the... It does a great job at that, yeah.
It does a great job of it, and you do get the origin of the character. You know, you see the character, you see Bruce Wayne become Batman from the beginning to the end of that film.
Yeah.
And all of the metaphors, like you said, tie together. You know, like the whole, the fear and the sin, all of that works, and the villains work within the concept of that, that, you know, that whole metaphor for fear and everything. And yeah, and just really good stuff. But, you know, looking at the really great, or what we think, I guess, are the really great comic book movies that have come out since. I mean, you look at movies like, say, The Winter Soldier, right? Or you look at Black Panther.
Jeez, God.
Right? Or Wonder Woman, right? Looking at a DC film. All great movies, right, in their own right. You know, the first Avengers, you know, Infinity, whatever you want to say, the great movies have been, Spider-Man Homecoming. They're just all so different than any of those Nolan films. And it doesn't matter. I mean, great movies are great movies. So we don't necessarily have to compare, you know, because they are different, and that's great that we have all these great different feeling movies, but I just don't know. I mean, do you have a comparison? Do you have one that you think is better?
I do, actually.
Okay.
And it's something I've been watching frequently, and it's Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah, I mean, that's... I wasn't thinking that, but that's a... I loved that movie.
Dude. There is so much going on in that film.
Yeah, yeah.
I absolutely adore it. Like, I don't. And the thing is, what I'm realizing is it's a it's a film that speaks to different generations.
Yes. Yeah,
and it like people, you know, like my I tweeted about this week. My wife, I said, oh, you know, I want to show you Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And she was like, no, I don't really like cartoon films. And I was like, babe, trust me. Like, you're really, really going to like it. 5 minutes in, she was locked.
Yeah.
She was locked. And my daughter was locked. And my daughter is like in love with Spider-Man right now. And my wife, and here's the funny thing, my wife won't watch it unless all three of us are sitting and watching it together.
Yeah. It's a special movie.
That's a beautiful thing.
It really is. And again, another classic and perfectly executed origin story.
Yeah.
I still think it's one of the best origin stories ever put on film. Yeah. If it's not my favorite, I'd have to think back. I mean, there have been a couple great ones, but it's an amazing movie. But I wasn't thinking of that because it is animated, and that's, again, my whole argument about that movie and why everybody should see it was that don't think of it as an animated movie. It's so much more than that. It's a classic superhero origin story.
Like, discounted it.
But I wasn't thinking about it at the same time because I'm thinking about, you know, all the live action stuff. But I'm not going to argue with you there. So Into the Spider-Verse is that good. It's definitely worthy of the conversation of best superhero movie ever made.
Oh my God. Like even the limited exposure we get to Kingpin, very, very limited. Right.
Yeah.
He's the big bad.
Yes.
His motivations for what he's doing.
Yes.
What he's doing in the film.
Mm-hmm.
You can totally get it.
Yeah.
You totally, it's from loss.
Yeah, absolutely.
And anger and feeling like the last thing that his family saw of him was because of Spider-Man. Yeah. And like, dude.
And factor in the revolutionary animation and everything else. Yeah. I mean, it hits every note. But yeah, I mean, your thing with the how, you know, it's a movie literally the whole family can watch and enjoy and appreciate. And even people who aren't into quote unquote that sort of thing. Can love it. Yeah, I mean, that's when you know you have a special movie on your hand.
Yeah.
So.
Damn good.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, and we got to, I guess we got to apologize too, just for a second, because we have, it's been a while since we've solicited questions, but we are going to get back to that eventually. It's just been it's been a little crazy and things are ramping up. So, but we will get back to the questions, maybe next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed. Okay. Last topic, and then we can kind of close the doors and get out of here. This is a quick one. So announced today, Bob Iger said that the Disney Fox acquisition is expected to close next week as of the 20th. So that's a hell of a lot faster than I think they had initially anticipated.
Probably,
But it was along the lines of what we had speculated about, that by their earnings call, which is going to happen in April, that they would have some news. So that looks like it's moving along quite nicely. A lot of people are very excited. I see folks talking about bringing the Fantastic Four to the MCU. Bring me the X-Men to the MCU. And I'm like, the hell with all of that noise. Give me my 4K original trilogy Star Wars films untouched. Do it. Do it now. I should have gotten it years ago. I'm glad I waited. Please give it to me.
There's there's no reason to not do it at this point at all. None.
Seriously.
Zero reason. Yeah. There's not a, you cannot, if you try to sit here and argue with me why I will just not listen, and I usually listen to everybody, I will not listen to you if you're going to sit here and try to convince me that there's any logical reason why that should not happen.
I mean, dude, can you imagine a freaking like multi-episodic box set with all of the new movies, the prequels, the special edition original trilogy, and the untouched original trilogy? So like, was it 12?
Yeah. Yeah.
Kill me now. I mean,
listen, if Halloween 6, the producer's cut, could get released on Blu-ray and they can take the time and effort to do that, then why, really, we can't get the original Star Wars trilogy untouched?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes all the sense in the world. There's really nobody to interfere in it at this point. And I mean, in the spirit of everybody loving to double and triple and quadruple dip, right, and get consumers to spend money for things they already have, I mean, there's a brilliant way to get people to buy those movies again. I mean, because you're buying, essentially you're buying something for the first time, but not kind of. Because it's not exactly a double dip, because it's, you don't have those versions of them, at least on a 4K transfer, ever. But that should be announced when they do their announcement of, oh, by the way, this deal has closed. The next thing they announce is, and we're releasing the original trilogy untouched on 4K.
Yeah, I hope they announce it at like Celebration. Ugh, need it, want it.
Yeah.
Anyways, so yeah, hopefully, you know, come D23, there should be some announcements from Marvel on what their next round of movies will look like, and hopefully it'll include some characters like the X-Men and Fantastic Four. So,
yes,
all good. So that's it. I think we're done.
We are.
Is that it?
That okay. Is it.
Let's do some plugs. Close the door.
Sure. Yeah. So, of course, you can go to thefanboygarage.com, check out the episode archive, listen to the current episode, buy some of our merch, send us an email through the email correspondence deal if you're not on social media. And, of course, we want you to join in on the conversation, and you can do that by tweeting us at thefanboygarage on Twitter and tweeting me at RealCLMighty.
And you can tweet me on Twitter, obviously, if you're tweeting, at Starting Sith. Please visit our Instagram page, which is becoming more and more active. More and more people are sort of tuning into that. So we'll keep the activity going on that front. Again, you know, Chris and I are absolutely committed to our cancer awareness campaign. More stuff. News coming on that front as we kind of pull things together on our end here, but stay tuned and locked for that. and we'll keep you guys updated.
We have a we definitely have a plan in place. It's just some of the things we have to wait on.
It requires a time. Bit.
Yeah, it requires some time and maybe some better weather. But we have a plan in place, and this thing will be ramping up, and we hope all of you are on board with it. And there's some other things going on as well with the podcast. We may be trying out some new things. Maybe some things that people like Tavo and Nathan and Phil might be excited about.
Oh yeah.
Going forward. So there's going to be some announcements. So start getting a lot of announcements coming up, and we're excited about all of them. So hopefully everyone's on board for everything.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, you know, our goal here is to do some special stuff for you listeners out there and have you guys participate on the show. You know, really get you guys committed to, you know, submitting some topics and even having you guys comment on topics. So certainly keep yourselves locked on, you know, future episodes and on our Twitter handles and every way that we can communicate with you, because we'll be sharing some stuff in the near term.
All right. That's it.
Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Take care.